This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Erica Harold says the last thing Illinois needs is another attorney general who will do the bidding of environmental activists.
It's not the attorney general's job to pick winners and losers among industries. It's just to make sure that everyone is complying with the law.
The Republican talks to GLT's Ryan Denham about comments to a coal energy conference in southern Illinois and her plans to fight public corruption. Plus, Jeff Crabill says he's running for alderman in Bloomington's 8th Ward, setting up a contest with Josh Barnett. And Don Knapp is the new McLean County State's Attorney. Eric Stock has more. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. McLean County has a new state's attorney, Don Knapp, the assistant county administrator and former lead attorney in the state's attorney's office civil division, is now the county's top prosecutor. He was chosen from among five candidates. Knapp tells GLT's Eric Stock he doesn't see the need for any substantive changes in the office he inherits from Jason Chambers, who's about to become a judge.
The thought that that the county board chair and the full board has the faith in me to continue the good work of what I see my father, who was a cop in town, to protect this community is humbling. I mean, it's just incredibly humbling.
There were five who interviewed for the position, all had a wealth of experience as a criminal prosecutor, also on the civil side. What do you feel may have set you apart?
You know, that's for the county board to decide. The worst question anybody could ask me is, why am I the best candidate for anything? Because I don't presume to think that that is my choice. I think I work pretty hard. I think my work ethic is pretty hard. And any job I try to get or any job I go for, I hope is based on work ethic and intellect. And I'm not the type to think I'm the smartest in the room or the hardest working, but hopefully between the combination of the two, I'm at least adequate.
Your father, having been on the beat for many years, how did he inform your view of law enforcement, and how did he inform your view later as a prosecutor?
Well, I started studying criminal justice in 1987 is when I came to ISU, and cases like Miranda versus Arizona in 1969 that started setting some bright line rules as a young, naive, stupid college kid. There were a lot of police officers around of my father's generation that operated before those bright line rules and after those bright line rules. And I remember having numerous conversations with my dad about, don't you hate this Miranda? Now you have to do this, that, or the other thing because of these rules. And he always told me he loved them. He thought those bright line rules for police officers made policing easier because all you have to do is follow the rules. And it's easier to do your job. And I think that mirrors with Jason and I. You know, I was the first civil assistant for 3.5 years. And as we were trying to figure out the FOIA implications and the civil implications of police cameras, body cameras, I think while there is an unbelievable cost, and the administrator in me says this is going to be a huge task, the criminal justice student and son of a cop says this is going to be better for police than it's not, because 99, in my view, so many of our police are out there doing great things every day. It's easy to say they did this or they did that, but when it's on camera, I think that helps prosecutors and I think that helps police officers.
You make quite a transition from assistant county administrator now, later today, to becoming state's attorney. How easily and how quickly can you make that transition?
We're going to find out. Hopefully very quickly and very easily. One of the things about being the assistant county administrator and working in these offices is we solve the problems of all of our departments. And I am not saying that I could run any department in the county, but I've been called upon to help them solve some of the hardest problems that they have.
As the assistant county administrator, you are intimately familiar with the budget, the numbers that the state's attorney's office has, about a $3.25 million annual budget. Does the state's attorney's office have the resources it needs and anything further that you would like to bring to it?
I believe it does have the resources it needs. It's not just the state's attorney's office, the entire county and every local unit of government and even the state are going to be asked to do more with less. Unless EAV starts growing significantly and people keep coming back to the state of Illinois, we're going to do more with less. What will ultimately determine whether the resources are adequate for the state's attorney's office or the public defender's office or the court system in general is how much tinkering the state of Illinois does with traditional revenue streams for the county, such as there are bills that are going to redirect some filing fees, lower some filing fees, increase others, and that is something I don't have a crystal ball and can tell. I've talked to a majority of the, Jason and I have had a number of conversations, and I've talked to the majority of the senior staff over there. They believe, would we always like a person or two more? Sure, but I think we are adequately staffed. Body cameras are going to be that's going to be a new element that just data storage and the amount of time it takes to redact and prepare those for trial is going to be a new gamut. Hopefully, my time in the administrator's office and working with our IT department and our court system will allow me to provide reasonable answers to those problems as they come up.
What kind of role can the state attorney's office play in proactively trying to limit crime, to stop it before it gets to your desk?
You know, that was one of the questions that was asked at the executive committee meeting, and without giving that any thought off the top of my head, the state's attorney and the office itself can certainly have a role in the conversation we're having in the community. When I grew up, the way I grew up, I was told when you engaged with a police officer, you should have a whole lot of yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am. And that's the proper way to engage with a police officer. Another way of saying it takes, you have to give respect to get respect. And I think there are people very invested in ginning up a conversation for political gain, that it is law enforcement versus non-law enforcement. So hopefully, now what does that stop crime before it starts? I don't know. But hopefully calming down some of that conversation at least allows us to have a reasonable conversation to engage some folks.
And this is Sound Ideas. Eric Stock with Don Knapp, the new McLean County State's Attorney. McLean County has taken great steps in recent years to address mental health as it pertains to the law enforcement issue with the McLean County Jail expansion to better account for that. How does that change your role as state's attorney? What kind of impact do you see that having in how offenders are prosecuted in this county?
Well, I think, and it's not just a new thing. Years ago in the budget, in our budget addresses for the county, every department, including the state's attorney's office, was directed and still is directed to bring their budget forth with an eye toward what they can do to help the county board's mental health initiatives. Without getting into the weeds of some of the details of the programs that were brought forth, there is a strong eye. You know, we've got Veterans Court, we've got Mental Health Court. There are already programs and policies and procedures in place that when screening takes place to try and identify, is this an act that was done with a mental health component that played a part in it, or was this just a crime that somebody fully mentally sound went and committed? So I think my role is just to ensure that we're paying attention to those policies and procedures and programs.
You had mentioned during your interview with the executive committee that there are some offenses that could simply be defined as being stupid acts versus those that are actually evil. How do you make that distinction, and how does that determine how you go about prosecuting a case, because there could be a case where someone does something stupid, not necessarily ill-intended, but there are still consequences to those actions.
Undoubtedly, stupid things can harm a lot of people, and we can't ignore those, and we won't ignore those. The great thing is, as I also said at exec, is I don't have to make that in a vacuum. The county board and the community in whole has spent a lot of time and resources providing such tools as the public safety assessment that Cassie Taylor and our court services folks create, that gives us the data necessary to try and make those determinations. So it would be, I don't know how long Sound Ideas is, but to debate whether an act is mala in se or mala prohibita is probably longer than this assessment. But one of the things I do want to hear from, and one of the things I'm hopefully going to be able to get out and talk to, are the coaches of the football teams and the teachers in the schools, and seek their input on, what do you know about, this is what happened, what do you know? I want people to tell our office what they know about the situation and what they know about the individuals in the situation.
Governor Rauner has proposed bringing back the death penalty for certain extreme cases, a death of a police officer in a shooting, or a multiple homicide. As the son of a veteran police officer, do you have any special reaction to that, and does that have any chance of becoming a reality, and could that perhaps at least be one more tool that a prosecutor could use?
You know, the thing about studying criminal justice and the death penalty is, when I studied criminal justice, the death penalty, there are two types of deterrents when you study criminal justice, a special deterrent and a general deterrent. In the 80s and up until years ago, it's my understanding there was not one study that showed the death penalty was a good general deterrent. I think since then there has been maybe one study that shows it can be a general deterrent if the person's put to death in a timely manner. There is no doubt it is the best special deterrent that's out there, as I don't think anybody who has ever been put to death has committed another crime afterwards. Personally, on the death penalty, I'm called upon to enforce the laws and seek the punishments that are out there. So to try and drag the state's attorney's office or me into a debate on the full death penalty, it seems somewhat irrelevant, right? I don't pretend to know what's in Governor Rauner's mind. He could pass a number of laws or veto a number of laws that we will deal with as it comes.
And lastly, as you take over as state's attorney, the top prosecutor in the county, you're doing so at a time when, of course, Jason Chambers is leaving to become a judge, and also Adam Grist, who was the first assistant, also leaving for a federal prosecutor position. So that's a pretty big transition for you to make. How quickly do you feel that can be done?
Immediately. There is a great team of people over there. Brad Rigdon is a special talent. Mary Cole, and I'm not just singling them out. I could name half a dozen to a dozen prosecutors over there that are true believers and are special talents. I've known Jeff Hoare for 20 years, and the people in McLean County should take comfort in the quality of the assistant state's attorneys that we have over there.
Don Knapp is scheduled to be sworn in as state's attorney today. He spoke with Eric Stock.
Support for GLT comes from State Farm Bank, offering mortgage consultation and rates to help you move from renting to owning your home. Additional information available by calling 1-877-SF4-BANK. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. NMLS ID 139716. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. Coming up, an interview with a new Bloomington aldermanic candidate. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 and WGLT.org. The fight for Illinois governor is the main event this November, though the attorney general's race is shaping up as a worthy undercard. Republican attorney general candidate Erica Harold will face Democratic state senator Kwame Raoul. Harold has spent a lot of time in McLean County recently, visiting ISU and the county fair, then again last night at a Women of the GOP event in Bloomington. She says voters here want an attorney general who will hold both parties accountable and take the partisanship out of the office to the extent possible.
People in the area also seem very focused on practical solutions that can have concrete impact on their communities, whether it's the opioid epidemic or other challenges facing communities. I think people want someone who can bring others together to leverage positive things that are already happening within the community and offer a positive vision going forward.
And you said that fighting public corruption would be a big priority for you if you were elected. In what levels of government do you sense that there's a need for more investigative and prosecutorial resources on corruption?
A specific area is the public access counselor within the Attorney General's office, because that's the area that's charged with enforcing compliance with the Freedom of Information Act and the Open Meetings Act. And it's my understanding from talking to people that sometimes there's a backlog within that office. And the importance of those statutes is a timely compliance. And so you want to make sure that you're able to give voters and constituent groups, media, watchdog groups, and citizens the kind of documents they need in a timely manner. So that's a way of preventing corruption from occurring within the first place. And so because that office is part of the Attorney General's office, I would be arguing that additional resources and personnel need to be allocated towards that to better equip it to do its job to help prevent corruption.
Well, and assuming that the Attorney General's office is not given additional budget to accomplish that, where do you take from to add additional resources to a public access counselor?
One of the things is looking at whether there are more documents that local governments can make online accessible online just as a matter of course. I think we have a lot of technological advantages right now, and it's important to leverage those as much as possible. So to the extent that there can be certain documents and contracts that are just placed on a website, then people who are wanting to see those documents can see whether they're accessible and available. And hopefully being able to better leverage technology equips people with the information they need to be able to make the decisions that are necessary.
Well, let's flip over to criminal justice reform. It's been a key part of your platform. What are your priorities when it comes to criminal justice reform?
One of my priorities is enhanced use of what are called problem-solving courts. So drug courts, mental health courts, and veterans courts. And those kind of courts give judges discretion to be able to assess the totality of someone's background and to see if maybe there are other diversion opportunities that might be more suitable for that person as opposed to just incarceration. I know McLean County already has a very successful drug court. And so I'm looking at the counties that are already having success and hoping to amplify those efforts to encourage other counties to adopt it. Another thing that I think would be important is expungement summits. Oftentimes, people are eligible to have certain parts of their criminal record expunged after a certain amount of time. But oftentimes people just aren't aware of that. They're not aware of the process. And there are certain fees that become impediments for people to access that. So Champaign County has a very successful expungement summit that brings together lawyers who volunteer their time on a certain day. The circuit clerk will waive certain filing fees, and also social service providers will come out to talk about resources that are available. And I think things like that really equip people to have a second chance. It makes it easier for people to have access to housing and job opportunities. And that's really something that's important to strengthening our communities.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Erica Harold, the Republican nominee for Illinois Attorney General. She'll face Democrat Kwame Raoul in November. So kind of related to drug courts is there are more than 2,000 opiate-related deaths in Illinois last year. There were a lot of things in motion across the state to address that. Locally, there's some things statewide that with the Illinois Department of Human Services. So what is the role of the Attorney General's office in all that? How would you contribute to this issue and this fight against opioid-related deaths?
I've done a couple or several roundtables throughout the state on the issue of the opioid epidemic to find out what are the strategies that are working well in communities and what are the greatest barriers. And then I've tried to assess what can the Attorney General's office uniquely do. And one issue is the need for additional facilities to treat people and for people to be able to be connected with the available beds and the available opportunities at the time in which they're trying to seek treatment. I've talked to a lot of law enforcement and mental health providers and substance abuse counselors, and they talk about how critical it is to be able to provide somebody with a opportunity to have treatment at the moment they've decided to do that. So there's a safe passage program that law enforcement in many communities, they work to provide that access to treatment, but trying to highlight across the state where are the areas where there are beds that are available, so that if somebody in a particular county, they're aware that this person's seeking treatment, but there are no facilities available in that county, trying to find ways to expedite that person's ability to get into another facility. Because if you lose that critical window or moment of time, sometimes you've lost the opportunity to be able to provide treatment. And if a bed opens up in that person's county, maybe 3 months from now, that person may no longer be in a position where they are prepared to seek the treatment.
In practice, what does that look like? Is that a website that the Attorney General's office maintains that coordinates bed access? I mean, what would that actually be?
So I've been asking people about what kind of information and data is already collected at the treatment center level, because I don't believe in unfunded mandates. And so you have to always be realistic about the fact that this is Illinois, so there's not going to be an excess or surplus of resources right now. And from what I've understood in talking to different treatment providers, there isn't right now any sort of database that is accessible to people throughout the state to be able to see in real time what sorts of areas have open beds or open facilities. And so I'm still talking through with some of the treatment providers to find out what kind of a database, if any, would address that. But that seems to me to be an unmet need, where it would not require a large amount of additional resources, but it's about actually using the data that's already being collected at the treatment center level.
Well, you've taken meetings with business leaders around the state talking about economic development opportunities and ways to strengthen Illinois businesses. What role do you think the Illinois Attorney General's office has and will play in improving the state's economy?
One of the things that I think that the Attorney General can do is to set forth a series of reforms as it relates to Illinois' workers' compensation system. When you look at our system in comparison to other states, ours is not competitive, and it often places companies and employers at a disadvantage when they are bidding for different projects or when companies are deciding where to expand. And obviously, the General Assembly would have to be the entity that ultimately enacts those reforms, but the Attorney General can certainly set forth ideas. And there are specific ideas that I think need to be set forth. And actually, the current Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, wrote a memo and released it talking about the ways in which Illinois' workers' compensation reform system should be reformed. And the workers' compensation system should be reformed. And I would draw from specific reforms that she has proposed, because this is not about partisanship. And it's important to talk about, here are ideas that come from a Democrat who's been there for 16 years. Let's make some progress on those ideas so that we can make sure that the people who need to be compensated are fairly and quickly compensated, and that we don't have claims that should not otherwise be covered within the system.
What is a sort of a bipartisan idea that you've come across that you would support when it relates to, as it relates to workers' comp, that you would lobby for and hopefully the General Assembly would address?
I think that a specific one is we need to have a causation standard that makes it clear that the kind of injuries that should be covered within the system need to be ones that are caused by performing your duties of employment on the job. And right now, the legal standard is a little bit more nebulous or ambiguous, and so that makes it much more difficult for judges, and it makes it more difficult for employers when they are trying to know exactly what's expected of them. And the purpose of a workers' compensation system is to make sure that you're not requiring people to go through an entire litigation process in order to have their injuries covered. And so it's very important to have rules that are concrete so that everyone knows what those rules are, and people can quickly decide whether that standard has been met. But if it's a standard that's ambiguous, then it makes it much more difficult to have that level of predictability.
Well, a few weeks ago, you spoke to the Coal and Mining Expo in Southern Illinois. Coal business is a big part of the Southern Illinois economy. In those remarks, you had said that the last thing that Illinois needs is another attorney general who will do the bidding of the environmentalist activist groups. What would you mean by that?
Senator Raul proposed a piece of legislation, Senate Bill 3005, that would change the standard of who has standing to challenge certain permits and and certain agency decisions. And there was an environmental group that was actually the entity that drafted that piece of legislation. And what I have emphasized for the entire course of this campaign is that it's not the job of the Attorney General to pick winners and losers, that Illinois benefits from having a multiplicity of energy sources. All of those companies must comply with the law, because everyone wants to make sure that we have clean air, clean water, and making sure that all companies are complying with Illinois' environmental standards. But I don't think that adding this additional standing, which would allow people who don't even live in Illinois to challenge agency decisions issued by Illinois agencies, I don't believe that that actually helps the interests of all Illinoisans. And I think it just adds to a litigious environment that makes it more unpredictable for entities who are going through the permitting process.
So voters should not read those comments in any way as you stepping away from the environmental enforcement actions that the Attorney General's office takes?
I would absolutely make sure that everyone complies with all of our laws. That's the number one job of the Attorney General. But I believe very much that it's not the Attorney General's job to pick winners and losers among industries. It's just to make sure that everyone is complying with the law. And that's what my comments reflect.
It has been a relatively violent spring and summer here in Bloomington-Normal. Between April and June, we had 7 fatal shootings in Bloomington-Normal, which is highly unusual for this community. Most, if not all, involved stolen guns. I know it's been a violent month up in Chicago as well. Well, not directly in your purview, you'll be one of Illinois' most prominent law enforcement officials if you were to be elected. So how do you think we can reduce gun violence in Illinois?
I think, first of all, we have to look at the different types of gun violence, because the different type will tell us the best practice. So, for example, domestic violence, that you would want to look at specific issues of orders of protection. You have gang violence, you have school violence. And I think looking at each one of those arenas is really important, because there are different best practices that would be most effective. In the arena of school violence, that's an area where I have been involved for quite some time. My platform when I was Miss America was preventing youth violence and bullying. And some specific things that I think we can do within that arena. First of all, we need to have more after-school programs and opportunities for young people. There need to be safe places where they can be after school, and not just safe places, but safe places that give them opportunities to cultivate their potential and to give them opportunities to expand their horizons. There needs to be additional resources for law enforcement, because community policing is the way that you are able to best reduce violence. You want communities to develop good relationships with law enforcement so that people feel comfortable communicating with law enforcement, both if they believe that a crime might occur or if they are trying to assist in solving a crime. There's also this concept of violence interrupters, so people who have relationships within the communities and can try to help de-escalate violence. I think we need to allocate additional resources towards those efforts, because I think that they are very effective. And while the Attorney General can't unilaterally do those things, I would absolutely embrace the opportunity to highlight those as strategies that we need to address, because we have to be more proactive in addressing those issues. And we have to think about the fact that we're talking about human beings that have potential. And in addition to the tragedy of the loss of life, there's loss of human potential there. Young people in particular who have creativity, dreams, and lives that need to be lived. And we need to do everything that we can as a society to ensure that they're able to fulfill that opportunity.
Well, you've talked a lot about the human being side of this issue of guns. But I do want to ask, though, as the person who would be responsible for defending Illinois' laws, should they be challenged in court, do you think that Illinois needs more laws that would restrict access to guns?
I think right now Illinois has a lot of laws on the books, and they need to actually be enforced. As Attorney General, if the constitutionality of any Illinois law was at issue, it is the job of the Attorney General to defend the General Assembly's constitutional role in enacting that, and I would absolutely do that. But as Attorney General, I think I would have the ability to highlight broader issues as it relates to the issue of violence, and I think that's where I could uniquely offer my perspective.
So you are running against Democrat Kwame Raoul in November. You have a new ad that's online and maybe on TV as well that tries to tie Raoul to House Speaker Mike Madigan, arguing that corruption in Springfield leads to higher property taxes in this particular case. So in your view, what is that connection between public corruption and taxes?
Well, the property tax system in particular is riddled with conflicts of interest where you have specifically Speaker Michael Madigan, who's involved with tax policy, property tax policy, and then simultaneously running a business, a law firm, where you hire them to appeal your property taxes. That's a conflict of interest that creates problems for Illinoisans, especially those who don't have the ability to hire an attorney to appeal their property tax assessment. And especially in Cook County, the system has been very arbitrary, right? I mean, it is the subject right now of a lawsuit challenging some of the constitutional implications of the fact that when if the assessments are reduced, that is passed on to other taxpayers, and it disproportionately impacts people who are unable or not able to afford someone to be able to advocate for their interests. And the reason why I highlighted Senator Raoul's involvement is that there was a piece of legislation that both he and Speaker Madigan were the chief co-sponsors, he in the Senate, Speaker Madigan in the House, that would have attempted to change the law to allow the city of Chicago to raise property taxes in excess of the statutory caps. And that is a problem. And so what I was challenging is the fact that Senator Raoul has not sought to reform the system while he's been in Springfield for the past 14 years, but in fact has sought measures that would have actually exacerbated the problem.
Republican Attorney General candidate Erica Harold was in town Monday evening for a Women of the GOP event hosted by McLean County Republicans. She'll face Democrat Kwame Raoul in November. Harold spoke with GLT's Ryan Denham.
Support for GLT comes from the Community Cancer Center, proud to provide community-based cancer care with the help of more than 100 volunteers, many of whom are cancer survivors who are well-equipped to support patients. Information at cancercenter.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A corporate attorney for State Farm Insurance says he wants to represent Ward 8 on the Bloomington City Council. Jeff Crabill has lived in the Twin Cities for 6 years. He announced his candidacy at El Toro Restaurant on the southeast side of town as a symbol of the small businesses he wants to support and stimulate. Crabill says his interest in the job kindled when he went through the Multicultural Leadership Project and took the Bloomington 101 program.
If I wasn't interested already, probably what solidified it was just some recent actions taken by the city council, which I think I can help to do better.
Like what?
Sure. Last Monday at the city council meeting, you may remember, it wasn't really reported on, there was an appeal from the Board of Zoning Appeals. The Board of Zoning Appeals had denied a request for variance for a setback, so meaning that the homeowner wanted to move his rear addition 6 feet into the setback, so you have to get a variance for that from the Board of Zoning Appeals. They gave detailed reasons why they weren't granting it, and those reasons were varied, including he could possibly build it differently. No one else had asked for that kind of request, and it really didn't serve a public interest. So I had read through that in the meeting agenda and the packet, and so I was waiting for the council to have a discussion about the reasoning and maybe why the appeal should be granted or denied. Unfortunately, what the council simply did was say, well, nobody objected to it, which I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily a criteria, and went ahead and unanimously approved that appeal.
So your take on it is you should pay attention to the zoning board and the screening body.
Well, I think it does a disservice to the people that volunteer to be on these boards and commission. You have people that put in their time and effort to attend these, to read the documents, to prepare these proposals, and ultimately, I don't necessarily say they made the wrong decision. Ultimately, the city council, and remember, this was a 4-0 vote by the unanimous vote by the Board of Zoning Appeals to deny this. But I just wanted a discussion. I wanted somebody to present the reasons that the board denied the request and have a discussion of why those reasons, should be disregarded or there is a reason to grant the appeal.
So how would you make sure that that process would be followed and that there's an argument demonstrated for decisions?
Well, first of all, I think you have to take a leadership role, and if that issue came, if I'm reading the packet beforehand, I would know that issue, and if somebody, if the motion was made and it appeared that nobody was going to make the argument, then I would enter discussions, make the argument, and hopefully have a discussion with the city council, and then make an informed decision.
There's already an announced candidate in Ward 8,
right.
Josh Barnett, a current
right.
county board member. Distinguish yourself from him.
Well, I know Josh. I first met Josh at the Multicultural Leadership Program in a speed mentoring event. He's very nice. I know that he's served 2 years on the county board. I would say my difference is that my focus is on Grow Local. That's kind of my campaign theme. And what do I mean by that? I mean that instead of trying to incentivize businesses to come into Bloomington that are not from Bloomington, whether it's through tax incremental financing, TIFs, or through total tax abatement, I think we should look at potential entrepreneurs in our own community and small businesses and see how we can help them grow, because ultimately, money spent at those businesses, procurement by those businesses, stays in the community. That money keeps turning around, keeps growing. And I think that's the way that we continue to grow as a community.
Local businesses are eligible for TIF funding for expansion or improvements within a TIF district, though.
But it's not as sexy, right? And if you're bringing in a big, huge business, that's sexy. But ultimately, I don't know that the smaller businesses get a fair shake. For instance, I talked with the Small Business Development Center, and I've worked with them on a project at the YWCA, and they get approximately $27,000 right now from the city of Bloomington. And as I understand it, the city of Bloomington pays $100,000 to the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council Committee for bringing in bigger outside type of companies. And so I think we can do more to emphasize that.
Is that really a fair comparison, though? I mean, the city of Bloomington also has its economic development arm.
Sure.
It has its own recent absorption of the Downtown Bloomington Association, which
right.
is all about local business.
Sure.
So that's not quite apples to apples there.
Well, it may not be apples to apples, but there's so much potential here, and I don't think that potential is being utilized by the city, by the county.
So how should the city reprioritize local business over outreach to new businesses?
Sure. One of the ways they can do that is right now the Small Business Development Center is understaffed. They could probably use a couple more staff members. What that means is they're having a lot of businesses that want their resources. What the SBDC does, it provides those resources to new businesses to help start that they couldn't necessarily afford otherwise, right? And so if you give the SBDC more resources, that potentially could help.
Okay, how much? Do you even it out and say $100,000 to EDC and $100,000 to SBDC, or what? And where does that money come from?
I don't have a specific amount, right? It has to be discussed and determined. And where does that money come from? I think you look at the budget and you find we found $100,000 to give to the BNEDC, and maybe that money needs to be divided more. I think you need to also look at While I think the public works part of the budget is very important, we need to continue to improve our streets. But we need to grow, right? And we need to increase tax revenue because we're having to make these budget cuts. It can't be all on one side.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Jeff Crabill, a candidate for Ward 8 Alderman in the city of Bloomington next April. So you mentioned the budget. Now, that's appropriate because the city of Bloomington is facing very tough budgets over the next several years. They
sure.
just have had a couple of tough ones, and it's not going to get easier.
Sure.
How would you prioritize reprioritizing programs or cutting programs or privatizing programs? What sorts of sensibilities do you bring to that unfortunate question?
Sure. Some people call it a moral budget. I think you have to look at budget items and see how they impact people. You want to look at, if you're going to cut something, how big of an impact is it going to be to people? Compared to something else, how big of an impact is that going to be? And you have to make those decisions on who it's going to benefit or hurt the most.
And if you had to lop $3 million off the city budget, where would you get that money, do you think?
Well, it's funny. When I went through Bloomington 101, they first had us cut out these numbers and try to figure out how much the budget was for each department. Once we got that figured out, then we had the opportunity to decide where to cut. And none of us could really felt comfortable, right? A lot of us wanted to kind of jump to Parks and Rec because that always seems to be the first, like, it's not necessary, people see it as not necessary, but, we realized that it was necessary for, for the well-being of the community. So it's going to take, shared sacrifice, probably. I can't think of any particular budgetary item. I'd have to look at what the city manager proposes and see what alternatives that we have.
In terms of priorities, there are several fairly large-scale potential projects out there.
Sure.
For consideration by the city council. There's
right.
a request that the library is making for a large expansion.
Sure.
There is the potential for a joint shared operation of a multi-sport complex.
Right.
There's the potential to move public works, and that is in the neighborhood of $7 to $12 million.
Right.
And would also facilitate an eventual library project if and when that ever happens. Does the city have the capacity to do any of those right now?
Well, I'd also add in the O'Neill Pool. I think that's something that should be on the priority list. I'm not sure which order, but it should be in the list there. I think you have to look again at, what would impact the most people. And, I look at, for instance, the library. And that's something that they've been trying to expand for the last 18 years. And it had a small expansion, I think, back in 2006 or 2008. But originally supposed to be 20,000 square feet. They only got 7,000 square feet. Right now it has circulation of about 1.3 million compared. That's about a little more than double normals, but the libraries are about the same size. So, and they're packed up in books, and so they really need to grow. So, and a library is something that's an equalizer, right? On every socioeconomic level, you have the homeless come in there, people that maybe don't have internet service or a computer can do the things they need to for everyday life. You have kids, right? A huge kids section. You have, if once I retire, I want to be at the library just, reading a newspaper or a magazine for a few hours and having some coffee. So it's something that's valuable to the whole community, and I think that's one of the things that should get the top priority. And it's going to be discussed at the next city or at a city council meeting on August 27th.
Josh Barnett is a Republican county board member. The
sure.
city council positions are nonpartisan,
sure.
although people come at the issues from certainly their own philosophical perspectives.
Right.
How would you define yourself?
I would define myself as, I would say, progressive. I am part of the Democratic Party, for sure. I have been involved in social justice issues, but I've been also involved in business. And I like to see myself as someone that can bridge that divide from advocacy that we see in this community, great passion and energy, and how to turn that into governance, right? How to turn that into law. And that's going to take a lot. And I think I can bring that energy to the council.
Some have looked at the council operations in the last 6 years, and certainly even dating back to some of the years of Mayor Stockton's terms before Mayor Renner,
sure,
and refer to it as council dysfunction.
Okay.
How would you assess the operation of the city council, and how would you suggest that the aldermanic relations with the mayor be managed?
Well, I don't see myself as necessarily a manager. So I think discussion's great, right? Heated discussion is fine. That's what we call kind of in the multicultural leadership, you learn it's crucial conversations, right? You have big issues and you have emotions are high, right? And it's good to have a healthy debate, but we need to do it where we respect each other. And I think we all need to keep that into account. I got a little frustrated with the welcoming city ordinance, for instance, and I remember in one public comment I called the council shameful for not passing something, and I felt that was a little over the top. And a few meetings later, I did apologize for that. So I think we have to be willing to apologize when necessary, try to get back at the table and try to get things done. So I don't know if it's necessarily dysfunction. I was a trial attorney for 18 years before coming over to the State Farm Corporate Law Department. And part of my job was to, dig into issues, be curious, and to persuade. I had to persuade juries to side with my client. And so I hope that can help me on the council. I hope that I can understand the issues well enough and to come to a position, ask the right questions of staff members, and try to persuade fellow council members and listen to them and come to a compromise so that we can move forward on things. It seems like whether it's the downtown task force or with the library, we've been talking for a while. We've had lots of plans, and I think we can move forward. We should move forward.
There is capacity to do the library.
Well, as I understand it, there are a special kind of board, right? And there can be potentially a bond issue where it would be something over 20 to 30 years, and it would add to property taxes. And for instance, what I understand is say if they expand the $28 million number that they're talking about, and for a $165,000 house, that would be about $50 a year, right? And so is that something the community wants? And so one of the things I want to say is that that I haven't mentioned yet is that I want to talk to the people of Ward 8, and I would find out what their concerns are. What do they think about a library? What do they think about their own community, where they live, their neighborhood, right? What are their priorities? And I think that if I can talk to them about that and get some idea, if they don't want a library, then we have to rethink, because I represent them. I represent the city of Bloomington, but I represent Ward 8. But I think if you're a resident of Ward 8 or any ward, it's one, you can't separate one from the other, right? And so we all have to kind of work together. So what information can I get from my Ward 8 residents, my fellow neighbors, as to what they'd like to see out of a library or downtown or the priorities? And how can we work together to make that happen?
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Jeff Krabel is running for alderman in the 8th Ward of the city of Bloomington. One of the not-so-infrequent criticisms of the Bloomington Council is that the ward system itself sets up a parochial viewpoint, and sometimes Ward 8 will win out when you should really be considering the needs of the entire city. How do you propose to balance those potentially competing pressures?
Well, I like the ward system and the fact that, I have a defined area that I can walk. I want to walk and canvas and talk to as many people as possible. I want to talk to as many businesses as possible to see what they need to grow. But I think that the ward, residents of the ward, you have to kind of talk to them and say, look, you know, maybe this doesn't directly benefit you, but if you had a library that's much bigger and much more useful, whether it's conference room space, more books, that's a benefit to Ward 8. My family goes to the library all the time. We love to go there, get books. We don't think it's 10 minutes away. It's not that far. And so I think a good library is something that that Ward 8 residents want. I think they want a good downtown, and we have a great downtown. I see a lot of people disparaging downtown, and if I looked at the History Museum, right? Beautiful. The BCPA, the artists, the restaurants, it's amazing. Can we do more? Yeah, let's just keep growing it, but it's not a bad thing. It's good.
Do we have a great downtown? I mean, we have an underperforming Bloomington arena. We have a front and center building that is vacant. We have a Pantograph building that is vacant. We have a C2 East building that is vacant. A lot of empty spaces.
A lot of opportunities. And so I think you take what's growing in downtown Bloomington, and I think you create that momentum where you can start to rebuild those areas. And I want to see the historical nature of those buildings kept and start to put things in there.
Bloomington City Council candidate Jeff Crabill says he's been married for 21 years and has two children. Crabill's likely opponent, Josh Barnett, says it is always great to see new faces who want to get involved. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. Our website is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Ryan Denham and Eric Stock. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. Also look at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM.